So my name is Karen Ladine. I'm currently a PhD student at Harvard and a research associate at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in the Department of Surgery. Sorry, can you hear me? Sorry about that. Can you hear me now? it's like the commercials. So I'm a PhD student at Harvard and a research associate at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. And I just want to thank the medical care section for putting on this this great panel, and it's really an honor to be a part of it. So today I'll be talking a little bit about whether or not we can predict living donor kidney transplants and a new approach to studying racial disparities in that context. I have no disclosures and no conflicts of interest. So as I said, I'll start with an overview of living donor kidney transplantation and disparities that are associated with it. And I'll talk a little bit about why I chose to study transplantation. I'll show you a new approach to studying disparities that has some statistical implications for previous studies. I'll give you our main findings and then conclusions for future disparities research. So kidney disease, the burden of kidney disease is increasing. And as you can see, chronic kidney disease is the ninth leading cause of death in the U.S., and it affects 12% of adults over the age of 20. Of those, 527,000 progress to end-stage renal disease, many of which end up on dialysis and need kidney transplantation. Blacks, Native Americans, and Hispanics face end-stage renal disease rates at 3.7, 1.8, and 1.5 times greater than whites. So you can see that there's disparities kind of along the trajectory. They're more likely to exhibit chronic kidney disease, and of those who do, they're more likely to progress to chronic kidney disease and need dialysis treatment. And as a result, we have a growing need for transplantation in the U.S. So in 2009, 16,831 transplants were performed, kidney transplants, were performed in the United States. However, during that same time period, over 32,000 patients were added to the waiting list. And so you can see that there's no way that supply can currently meet this increasing demand. Recently, the growth in kidney transplantation has been largely due to living donor kidney transplantation, both related and unrelated. And as a result, my research will focus on this new and expanding potential for the field of transplantation. So with respect to living donor kidney transplantation, living donor kidney transplantation is associated with superior graft survival and patient survival, and it's cost effective. So when compared to dialysis, kidney transplantation confers a longer lifespan, improved quality of life, and lower healthcare expenditure. Living donor kidney transplantation is cost effective compared to dialysis, with a crossover occurring at approximately 3 years. The benefits of living donor transplantation has large age and race gains. So as I said, patient survival after kidney transplantation is 95%, 91%, and 85% at 1, 3, and 5 years, respectively. And it's higher in patients undergoing preemptive transplantation, which is transplantation before starting dialysis. Kidney transplantation is one of those unique cases in medicine in which there is actually a racial difference in terms of compatibility. So there's difference in terms of HLA compatibility between blacks and whites. And because whites comprise the largest percentage by far of deceased donors, black patients are less likely to find a good match in terms of deceased donor kidney transplants. And as a result, blacks stand to gain the most from living donor kidney transplantation by finding a better match within their network. But despite this, in 2007, blacks constituted about 37% of dialysis patients and about 34% of the waiting list. However, they received just 13.8% of living donor kidney transplants. And this actually was reduced or decreased in the past few years to 11%. So large potential, but it's unfortunately not being utilized. Okay, So the literature thus far focusing on living donor kidney transplants has focused on demand-side characteristics. So they've looked at recipient factors in attempting to explain the gap between blacks and whites in terms of their likelihood of receiving a living donor transplant. And the literature is focused on factors such as financial status, cultural beliefs, medical comorbidities, education, continuity of health care, etc. Kind of the usual suspects. And one reason, I guess, to study especially racial disparities in the context of transplantation is it's a very well-regulated market, and it's a market in which every patient is insured. So we don't have this insurance bias where we have in other areas of medicine. So it's an eligibility for Medicare pre-age 65. So all recipients are eligible. And Medicare covers kidney transplantation in full, including donor expenses. So as you can see, the assumption from the literature has been thus far that disparities in the baseline characteristics of patients tracking with race drive the gap in living donor kidney transplants. And so as part of our study, we asked this overarching question of whether it's a demand-side story. So previous studies have cited these numerous factors, but they haven't been able to explain the gap. And so in our research, we look first to see, are racial disparities in living donor kidney transplant rates associated with lower rates of donor presentation? We then ask a clinically relevant question. Is there a critical time period after which donor presentation is unlikely to yield transplantation? And finally, in order to understand whether or not this is really a demand-side question, whether or not patient characteristics are really underlying the disparity, we use a new technique. And what we do is we ask the following question. If black patients and white patients had the same distribution of characteristics that are cited in the literature, would disparities in living donor kidney transplant rates persist? And I'll tell you a little bit more about how we did that statistically in a moment. So the methods that we used, we first used Kaplan-Meier survival estimators to estimate three endpoints. So first, the time until the first donor evaluation. Second, the time until living donor kidney transplant, if the patient did receive a living donor transplant. And finally, the time until any transplant, living or deceased. We adjusted for demand-side factors that I listed before, and we used parametric survival models to estimate the time until first donor presentation, since first donor presentation was highly correlated with living donor kidney transplantation. And finally, we used propensity scores and subclassification, which I'll explain more in a moment, to reweight the groups according to the distribution of factors and estimate their projected living donor kidney transplant rates if each group had the distribution of characteristics that the other one has. Whoop, sorry. Oh, I'm not sure how to go back. There we go. So our sample is 752 recipients, which comprised 1,450 person years on study, and 654 donors that were evaluated in our medical center between the years of 2004 and 2008. And the reason one of the reasons that this study is unique is that we have both patient and both recipient and donor information. Another reason is that we try to avoid these between-center influences. So many of the national studies can't account for between-center influences. And so we employ a within-center longitudinal model to study this question. So this figure here shows the distribution of the relationship of the potential donors to the patient. And the way to interpret this is that for 100 patients enrolled for 1 year in our study, this would be the percent of people who came forward, potential donors. And as you can see, there are pretty significant disparities in terms of the relationship of the potential donor to the patient. So you can see that our black patients were far less likely to have their children, for example, or their siblings come forward to be evaluated. But they were more likely to have parents or altruistic donors. One reason for this might be that our black patients are approximately 7 to 10 years younger than the white patients, and that's true across the nation. So blacks exhibit end-stage renal disease about 7 years earlier on average than whites. So in terms of time until transplantation or time until our endpoints, you can see that there's the disparities are significant at every endpoint. So after 1 year, 45% of white patients, whereas only 26% of black patients, had at least one donor evaluated. And these differences hold throughout, as I said, both the middle model, which shows time until any transplantation, and the final model, which is time until living donor transplantation. And you can see that only about 7% of our black patients ever received a living donor transplantation during the course of our study. However, what we also found here is that there's a critical time period for donor presentation. So after 6 months, it's very unlikely that a donor will present both for black and white patients. And this has important clinical implications for interventions seeking to increase donation. So finally, to ask this question about what's driving the gap between the races, we did the following. We identified factors that were associated with disparities, both from the literature and from a bivariate analysis. And we identified the following factors: gender, marital status, functional limitations, employment, blood group, smoking, drinking behaviors, BMI, psychiatric history, age, educational attainment, number of siblings, number of children, hypertension, hemodialysis, or peritoneal dialysis. And what we did is we took those factors and we first estimated the prevalence in each group, so in our white group and in our black group. We then reweighted the groups according to the distribution. So we generated a hypothetical group of white patients having the distribution of characteristics that our black patients had, and we did the same for our black patients. And we then, this statistical technique is called subclassification, and it avoids some of the bias that is associated with regression studies that compare groups that have different distributions of baseline characteristics. And finally, we reran our model with this projected group to see if the disparities persist. So that's to say, if we account for all these factors that have been associated or have been said to explain the gap, do we see disparities persisting? And so what you have here at the top is the referent group. So this is the actual observed group. And at the top, in red, you have blacks. And at, below it, in blue, you have the white patient group. And you can see the model specifications at the bottom. We first adjust for just gender and age, and then for marital status, employment, education, et cetera. And as you can see, these factors do not account for much of the gap at all. If anything, the gap widens after you account for some of these characteristics. For example, as I said, our black patients are younger than our white patients, and younger age is associated with higher likelihood of living donor kidney transplant. So after you adjust for that, the gap widens. And so we find this to be surprising, given that the literature has focused so heavily on these factors. So finally, what can we conclude from this study? So as I've shown, racial disparities in living donor kidney transplant remain significant at every endpoint, suggesting that blacks do not catch up, even if they learn about living donor kidney transplant later in their disease process. So this is the idea that patient knowledge or patient education or patient willingness is somehow underlying the disparity. We don't feel that that's the case. And as I said, disparities in rates of donor presentation track with race and cannot be explained by patient characteristics. So what can we conclude about clinical interventions? Clinical interventions should be aimed at the time-sensitive period of 6 months. So 6 months after the recipient is evaluated is really the time critical period, after which it's unlikely that they're going to be able to have a donor come forward and that donor yielding a transplant. And finally, this model, we use this model to suggest that supply side factors, rather their social network, something about social network characteristics or differences in donor willingness rather than patient willingness, might underlie some of these gaps. And I just want to acknowledge John Ayanian, the Statistics Department at Harvard, and Tom McGuire, who have been very instrumental in this research. And the research was funded by the Harvard Catalyst pilot grants and a grant from the Julie Henry Fund. So thank you very much. Thank you.